is Pull Yourself Together with E. Shaver Booksellers.
Hello, I'm Jessica, a lifelong lover of books, wide-ranging reader, fan of obscure British literature, all things Douglas Adams, long sentences, music biographies, the Oxford comma, always up for travel, except during COVID, and of course, Jane Austen.
And I'm Melissa, an eclectic bibliophile and all-around nerd who also loves Jane Austen, comics, and cooking. Together, we run an independent bookstore in Savannah, Georgia. Each episode, we discuss the books we've been reading and recommend.
Well, hello, everyone.
Hello. Welcome back.
Yeah. So, it's September.
It is September.
It's mildly cooler here in Savannah, which is just setting us up for a lie.
I know. But enjoy the pretty days while we can, because today is a lovely day.
Yes.
It's blue sky. Mm-hmm. It's a smidgen cooler.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
It was only 64 this morning when I was out on my porch drinking my coffee. So that is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're recording this earlier in the month than we normally do because Jessica and I are getting ready to leave to go to England for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So when this actually posts, we'll be in the middle of our trip.
Yes. And I didn't plan this, but weirdly, a lot of the books I'm talking about today take place in England and are by British authors. Well, no, they're not all by British authors, but some of them are.
None of mine take place in England.
Mm-hmm. It was a coincidence. It was not premeditated reading. It was just picking up what appealed to me.
Yeah, mine are all strange this month.
Mm-hmm. Mine are also, well, they're not all strange. Some of them are more traditional, but they are, yeah. It's an interesting group of books I've read this month.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's get to it. Jessica, okay. What do you want to talk about first?
Well, I am going to talk about Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which I read for our Tequila Mockingbird book club. This is one that I have been acquainted with for a while because many of the men in my life love John Le Carré, and I have not read him really, and but I've seen the movie, and I've talked about it in depth. My grandfather was a big fan. My husband is a big fan. So I went into this knowing that although they're not male and female books, that this book tends to appeal to men of a certain age and with certain interests. And knowing that, although I found it, initially, I found his writing fairly confusing because you get into the book and there's a lot going on all at once and you're just thrown in.
I will second that because yeah. This is the one book I have DNF'd in years.
Yeah.
Like we had this conversation about how I don't DNF mm-hmm. books. This one.
Yeah.
Because no.
Yeah. So I will warn you that, yes, you get in there and there is a lot thrown at you all at once. And it really does take a minute for it to congeal into the story. So
I didn't make it far enough for it to congeal right. into a coherent story. Yeah.
So I had to read it because I was leading the book group. And that is one of the rules is that, yeah, you need to read the whole thing. And I'm glad I did, but it was not an easy read for me. It was a very good discussion for book group. And I did ultimately, so I ended up, I started reading it. I was having a little bit of a hard time with it, which is unusual for me because I usually can pull together everything that's going on in even the most obscure of books. So I was surprised by this. So I actually went and read a couple of articles on it, then went back and read the novel, and then watched the movie, the newer movie. And by the end of it, I felt like I had a good grasp of the whole thing.
I feel like if you have to watch a movie, read the book, and read multiple articles about the book to have a grasp of what happens in the book, maybe the book is not 100% successful in what it's setting out to do.
Well, there's a huge amount of people who like it, who think he's a genius. And so I will say it's just a different style of writing. And It is sort of an anti-spy spy novel because he was writing in response to the big glittery James Bond type stories, and Le Carré was a real spy, and so he writes more about the everyday boring details of being a real spy.
That's not what I'm looking for in my spy books.
Well, and a lot of it you do need some. This book takes place in 1973-74 time frame. It's based on a real thing that happened. Just to give you a little background on what the book is about, there's an older agent, he's a spy master, George Smiley, and he, at the beginning of the book, is being let go.
Well, he's retired at that point.
Yeah, he's retired, but he was forced into retirement.
Right.
And so he's brought back in because there's a mole, and they want him to find the mole. And ultimately, he does.
But part of the reason he was let go is because he said there was a mole.
Right. So it is a complicated book. It uses a lot of spy terminology that he either made up or is part of the business. So it takes a minute to get into that language.
There's a lot of telling things that happened not at the time that they're happening and in weird conversations.
You get a lot of your background information conversationally, and then there are characters that you meet in the beginning of the book that you don't really understand where they fit in until about midway through the book. And so it does all come together in the end, and it is an interesting story, but you do need to know a fair amount of what about the Cold War and the relations with the Soviets and the spy industry at that time. And
the
what
spy
was going
industry.
Industry. I don't know. Whatever you call it. I mean, what do you call it? It's kind of the information industry.
I guess so.
I don't know.
I just feel like that's not the right term, but I don't know what would be better.
Yeah, it's not the right term. And I sound like an idiot talking about this. But the discussion was quite good. And I think everybody came out on the same kind of page that, although it was a difficult read, it was worth it to read his work to understand. Kind of like when someone says John Le Carré and they're looking for a book by him and they love this kind of writing, now I understand what they're looking for. And so it helps me.
I apparently made a face, Jessica.
So, yeah. But George Smiley himself, I found to be an interesting character because he's very smart. He's kind of one of those beige people.
Yeah. Whose wife just cheats on him repeatedly.
Yes.
And he's just like, you know, it's a thing.
Well, they're separated. but he loves her. He still loves Anne and hopes that they'll end up, you know, back together. But it seems, Anne seems like, she's somewhat unreliable.
She's sowing some oats.
She's sowing lots of them, yes. So, it is an interesting mix of characters. And if you're going to read the book, I do recommend the movie Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy that came out in the early 2000s, I think. It is very well done. It follows the book pretty closely, although it does it in a different order, which is actually helpful because it does it more in a straight timeline than going back and forth. You do go back and forth a little bit, but it's just a little clearer. But it does give you a good idea of the tensions at the time and just the sort of unglamorous day-to-day slog of the information-gathering community.
There you go.
Yes. So, yeah, it is. And Anne, it's interesting because his wife, Anne, is also George Smiley's weakness. And it is a way that that the other side, the Russians, actually are able to catch him out a little bit at the beginning because they have done the work and understand that he has this love for his wife and this is his weak spot. So they actually encourage another agent to have an affair with her to kind of distract him and to give him some power. And anyway, it's just, it is an interesting story. And if you are into learning more about that time and what was going on in the spy world, then I would highly recommend this. It's not a book that's going to appeal to everybody, but it definitely has an audience.
Okay.
It was a very convoluted.
Well, it makes sense because the book was very convoluted. Okay. So in essence, you did it a fair job.
All right, Melissa. And I could go further about the characters and everything else, but I think I'm going to leave it where it is.
All right.
Yes.
All right. So there's a publishing company called New Directions.
Mm-hmm.
And they, a few years ago, did this series that they called the Storybook Series. And it was like short, a little bit shorter than a short story, but a little bit shorter than a novella. So mm-hmm. around like 60 to 70 pages.
Okay.
And they were all, their idea was for adults to have a book that they could read in one sitting, like basically reading a picture book when you were a child to mm-hmm. kind of recapture that idea of just reading a complete story in one sitting. And they publish a lot of, New Directions in general publishes a lot of more obscure authors, more foreign authors, or like works by authors you know that are not their big works. Mm-hmm. Like, so they publish a book by Fitzgerald called The Crack Up on Booze, which is not like one of his big books, mm-hmm. but you know, so that kind of publisher. So I had been reading through the storybook ones because I thought the idea was interesting, and I came across an author named Rachel Ingalls, and mm-hmm. The book that she wrote for that series is called In the Act, and I thought it was really fantastic. It was like darkly funny. It was very much ahead of its time. Thoroughly enjoyed it. So I was seeking out other things by her. So I found this book called Mrs. Caliban, mm-hmm. And it has a quote on the front from The New Yorker saying, a perfect novel.
Ah.
I will say, it's a very weird book. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it. And it's very short. It's like, it's a little novella. It's like 111 pages. I would compare it to, like, Beauty and the Beast, possibly.
For adults? Or?
Yeah. So it starts out, the main character is named Dorothy, and this was published in 1982 originally. Mm-hmm. And she lives in the suburbs with her husband. They had a child who passed away, and like when mm-hmm. the kid was young. And so their relationship has been fairly strained since then. And she's a stay-at-home wife. So she's just kind of going through her day-to-day without anything. You know, she knows there's distance between them. They don't really talk anymore. He's at work all the time. She suspects he is cheating on mm-hmm. her. So she's doing the dishes, and she listens to the radio, and there's a radio announcement that comes on from the Institute for Oceanographic Research that a monster has escaped from their research facility and that killed two people. It's extremely dangerous. They want people to be on the lookout for it. So she's heard this announcement in her kitchen. The door opens, and in walks this, like, over 6 foot tall, basically frog man.
Okay.
Who is
like the creature from the Black Lagoon.
A little bit. Yeah. So mm-hmm. he's the monster who has escaped mm-hmm. and she and, this monster named Larry
mm-hmm. Larry.
Yeah, begin at first a friendship. She's concerned for him. She feels like he's been mistreated. He's very hungry when he comes in. Like, so she's feeding him, and she tells him he can stay in their guest room just to keep undercover.
What was that movie? There was a movie, not exactly like this, about the woman who cleaned out, and they had an experimental sort of, they had caught a river creature.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
Well, so then she and Larry eventually begin a romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because there's a lot in it sort of about relationship dynamics, sort of gender politics of the time. Mm-hmm. I think even for this being in 1982, I think her stance on sort of women's place in places in society is kind of still ahead of its time. It's just, again, very strange, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. There is kind of a twist at the end, which I guessed at part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're just looking for something that is sort of off the beaten path, like, mm-hmm. This would be a good one. And I think she's just a really interesting author.
The Shape of Water. Did you see that movie?
No, I never saw that movie.
Oh, it's really good. If you like that book, I recommend you watch The Shape of Water.
Okay. Yeah, so mild love story.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of social commentary.
Yeah.
A little bit of strangeness.
Read The Shape of Water, or watch The Shape of Water. Yes, very cool.
So yeah, Mrs. Caliban by Rachel Ingalls. And I really would actually recommend her other book, like the little one in the storybook series, In the Act.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you read the book Annie Bought that came out recently.
Okay.
It's a precursor to that, but again, really ahead of its time.
Okay. Very good. Well, I am reading a short one. It's a novella. It's a 152 pages. And almost like connected short stories where there's a part and it stands on. Anyway, it is called The Universality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by Natasha Brown, who was named one of the best young British novelists. And her debut novel was Assembly, which I have not read. But this one comes out in... tell me when you come out, my friend.
Is it on the front?
March. This one comes out in March of 2025. And it starts out one night on this Yorkshire farm where there's a rave going on. And it's an illegal rave because it's COVID and we're not supposed to be doing this. And... there's a young...
What is it? The American South?
I know, right? It's the British North. There's an equivalency there, but yes. So there is this... Anyway, you get into the story where this guy has just been knocked out and assaulted with a gold brick. A literal gold brick.
Where did the person get the gold brick to assault someone with?
Well, that... Okay, so here we go. Now we're going on the ride. So... ambitious young journalist has gone in and is trying to figure out what the heck happened.
Yeah.
So there's this Yorkshire farm. It's owned by a banker who lives in London. He's your basic amoral kind of young, really loves his money, youngish banker. And he's bought this...
I'm picturing Russell Crowe in the beginning of...
yes.
A Good Year.
And I think that would be appropriate.
Okay.
So, kind of a jerk. He's bought this place out in the country. It was a farm in a community. It was a working farm in a community. And then they had to sell. He bought it. He built this huge, like, sustainable house. He also happens to have a gold brick. And normally people aren't supposed to just own a gold brick. It's hard to just purchase one, and most people keep them in a bank or some other place. He was keeping his gold brick on the mantle.
Like you do.
Like you do. You know, so, and it's worth about $500,000, the gold brick. So this kid, young man, is living at the house, and all of a sudden this group comes in. He invited a girl to come up, and she brought this whole sort of commune from London. And this is where and they are trying to build a utopian world and live on their own, and it's during COVID. And then they have this party one night. It gets out of hand, and the leader of the cult is assaulted and hit on the head with the brick, and she wants to find out who did it, why these people were here at all, and it just goes from there. And so the first part of the book is about her reporting on this, mm-hmm. and you get into each character, and it turns out that the actual kid who did it's, well, I don't want to give away too much.
No, don't.
anyway, there's a columnist that's kind of, I picture her as sort of a, I don't know, she's a iconic sort of British newspaper columnist who likes to stir it up a little bit. And then there's the anarchist movement who's taken over this farm at this point. This is where the police come in and they're all asked to leave ultimately. But, and then the next part of the book, you start going into the reporter's life. And so they're like interconnected stories. And I'm really enjoying it. The writing is great. And I actually want, when I finish, I want to give it to you. Because
it sounds really good. I was like, because I would like that when you're done.
Yeah, because I need to talk to someone about it. Because there's a lot of interesting ideas in here. Like, they're almost espousing this hippie cult utopian thing. But then there's another edge to it because it's in today's 2020-ish society. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's really good. And
seems like that's a lot going on in such a small book.
It is a lot going on, but it is and it really is all about words and how we use words and how words can take you to truth or to power and how we twist them and try to get what we want and convey our meanings in life.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. Yeah. Because that idea of like the power of words, like, I mean, like that's the kind of the, crux of, Babel. Mm-hmm. Cause it's like the difference between like when you translate something, the difference between what the word means in one language and then what it means like translated, because you can never translate something exactly.
Right. And then
like Lexicon, the Max Berry book, mm-hmm. is all about using words as power and persuasion and all, like
it is. Well, so way back when, in my previous life, when I was studying a lot of philosophy and ancient texts, it was frustrating because if you're not a Greek speaker or a Latin speaker, then you are 100% at the mercy of the translator. And just the array of different versions of the Bible that there are. And
well, I can say someone who took 5 years of Latin, in which like the last 3 years were very much just looking at old things and mm-hmm. translating them. Just the, like, and I get that we were, you know, high school students,
right.
but just the difference in class of what each person ended up translating a thing at, we're all looking at the same thing.
Right.
But there's a myriad of ways that you could translate it.
And every translator puts their own spin on it. They don't mean to. It's just that you're always bringing yourself to the party.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I think that's a great analogy. And it, the power of words. And the gold brick thing is just, it's interesting. And I am looking forward to this book getting on the shelves because I think it will really do well.
Okay.
And it is one that you can just sit down and read in one sitting. I just didn't manage to do that because I ran out of time.
I mean, other people could do it.
But
I didn't.
Other people could do it. I am going to finish it on the plane. It's one of the ones that's going with me.
Yeah.
All right, Melissa, on to you.
Okay, so now for something completely different. So this one, if you've listened to this, you know my love of Tor and Tor.com.
Yes. I am so aware.
Yes. So this is a book that came out, I believe,
last week or the week before. It came out this month, though. So it's called Haunt Sweet Home by Sarah Pinsker. And so it is a ghost story, haunted story that has to, that centers around a reality show, and I'm using quotations, about people who have bought property that they're looking to renovate, and they believe that it's haunted. Mm-hmm. And so they go, so the, and what is the guy's name? I think it's Jeremy is the, yeah, Jeremy is the host of the show. Mm-hmm. And so he'll show up, they'll talk about what they want to do for renovations, and then something haunted happens and they're trying, you know, okay. Mm-hmm. So he has a cousin named Mara, and Mara is just kind of the screw up of her family. Like she has been in and out of community college and has never really done anything. So mm-hmm. she's the person that goes to family gatherings and no one really talks to her because they don't have anything to say to her because mm-hmm. she's just sort of treading water and not mm-hmm. doing anything with her life. And part of her, so part of the kind of lore of their family is the grandmother was a wood carver mm-hmm. and she would make these beautiful artworks and sell them. But she also made for each person in the family, they call them their thrones. So mm-hmm. they're these carved wooden chairs that they have all out around this fire pit. Mm-hmm. And she wouldn't carve one for people until they turned 18 because okay. she doesn't really know them till that point. They haven't become like mm-hmm. a full person or whatever. And so everyone else in the family has one, but her grandmother's arthritis gets so bad that she can't carve anything.
So she never
carved one for her. So she's like the one person in the family that doesn't have it. So she's just kind of on the outs of her family. So Jeremy offers her a job working on the TV show as a production assistant mm-hmm. because she really doesn't have anything else going on. So she takes the job and she's on the night crew. So like he's usually filming with the day crew. Okay. She's on the night crew. And so she becomes the person who's responsible for creating these haunted incidents. Mm-hmm. And
wait a minute. Creating these
songs? Yeah, they're not real.
Okay.
And so she like does things like tossing books off shelves. Like any, mm-hmm. so anyway.
So things that just happen at our store.
Exactly. so she meets one night when she's working, she meets this girl named Joe who is on the day crew and says she's been sent there to kind of help them with it. And mm-hmm. they become friends. And you also learn, too, that Mara has a talent for wood carving as well.
Okay.
And so that's sort of a thing that she does.
Well, good. She should carve herself her own chair.
Right. But while she's working, she finds this tree that's got this, like, weird thing happening. So mm-hmm. she wants to carve it into, like, what she thinks, like, what it could be. So she cuts the part of the tree out and mm-hmm. is working on this project while she's doing the show. And so it is a ghost story. There is more to it, mm-hmm. but it's sort of more about being haunted by the possibilities of what your life could be, or being haunted by like the disappointments and never fully fitting in. And it's just sort of like bittersweet.
Yeah. So I know that it reminds me a little bit of the Midnight Library.
It did not remind me of that at all.
But just that not knowing where your place is in life and wondering what would happen. That's the only thing.
Yeah,
it's just the wondering what would happen if you took a different path in life.
Yeah, but I would say that it is not. I did not find this one saccharine.
Okay. I like a little saccharine sometimes. Yeah. And but
Yes, but I think I appreciate very much the idea that everyone has the desire to think of the way their life would have gone if they had just done one different thing or gone in a different direction. It comforts me to know that that's a universal.
Yeah. Well, but I think like she doesn't even know what she possibly could have done. Like she like just doesn't have any sort of, it just no direction, no sort of.
Is she a frustrating character to read about, or is
she, I, you know, like you think she would be, but she wasn't actually. Like she just is one of those people that just kind of
drifts.
Yeah, and I don't know. I liked it. I liked the reality show aspect of it. I thought that was, there was some really funny things about it. But yeah, it's a like spooky light.
Okay.
Kind of ghost story.
Oh, I like spooky lights.
Yeah, so it's called Haunt Sweet Home by Sarah Pinsker.
So the next one I read is Julie Schumacher's The English Experience. And she wrote Dear Committee Members in 2014, which I absolutely loved. So if you have spent any time in academia, know people who have taught at a college level, these books are for you. They really are. I have not read the middle one, The Shakespeare Requirement, but I'm planning on reading it in the next few days. But she makes me laugh out loud. She just captures the absurdities of some of these things that happen in academia. And anyway, in her 2014 novel, it starts out with Jason Fitger. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And he's a professor in the English department at Payne University, which is somewhere sort of in the Midwest, you gather. And he is recently and unhappily divorced. And he's just kind of schlepping through life at this point. And he's always fighting people to get more money for the English department because nobody wants to give them any money, and the economics department is getting all this money, and all these other places are getting money, and he just really wants the English department to exist and be on an equal footing. At the same time, you're going into, like, his wife is having a relationship with the dean of another department, and it's a small town, and anyway, it is very, very funny, and I don't want to spoil it. The English Experience is the last one in the trilogy, and we've still got our buddy, Jason Fitger, who is tagged because nobody else will go to take 11 students to England. He hates England. There is no syllabus for this class, so he has to come up with it. It was supposed to be taught by a different department.
What is the class even supposed to be?
It's called the English Experience.
Oh, well, sure. Okay.
Yeah. And so they go to England and they go to the museums and everything. And what he ultimately has them do is write a little essay every day, 500 words of one thing they've experienced on the trip. And so you actually, it's almost epistolary in that you get to read these papers as he's going through.
Interesting.
And so you get to know each student, and it's hilarious, and it is very true and timely. He has one student who just decides he's going to, like, one day he's like, oh, he's not here. He flew to Paris. Oh, he texted and he's gone to Budapest. And so he just, like,
I feel like this was like my husband's experience teaching in Lacoste.
So it reminds me so much of that, except he's alone. They're staying in this dorm. They have this superintendent. And at the very beginning of the book, he falls down the stairs and majorly messes up his ankle.
And I've been there.
Yeah. And so has to go buy new shoes because his foot is swollen, like has a hard time walking, can't go out on the first day with the kids. He's got one kid who's never been away from her cat, Mrs. Gray, before, and wants to talk to him a lot and show him pictures of Mrs. Gray. And
I bet he loves that.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, all of these kids, you appreciate them at the end, but it is really fun getting to know them and all their quirks. There's a couple on the trip.
And there always is.
And but they have broken up. So they applied for the trip together. One of them got a scholarship. And this is right in the first part of the book, too. One of them got a scholarship. So she's definitely going. And she's writing a letter saying that her ex-boyfriend should not be allowed to go because he can get his money back. And she signed up for the trip. And he only signed up because she was going. And she doesn't want to sit next to him or be anywhere near him on the trip and all these things. But then they end up kind of so you get that whole love thing going on. And then the girl who's terribly homesick, and then there's a very shy girl, and then there's a girl who is sick for most of the trip. And he's trying to negotiate all this. And there are things still going on at school. They expect him to do all of his, he's dean of the English department, so they expect him to do all of his normal work.
Sure.
And they're like, yeah, you can just do that on the plane right over.
Yeah, sure.
Sound familiar?
Yeah, I've heard that before.
So this book very much reminded me of stories that my friends who teach tell. Mm-hmm. And I just loved it. It's laugh out loud funny. The writing is great. The way she corrects people's grammar and other things in there, or the main character who is male, is hilarious. And the essays that the students write, some are very poignant, but they are also pretty hilarious too. Mm-hmm. And they go all over London, and then they spend one day in Bath, and they spend a day in Oxford. And a lot of the tours reminded me of things that Melissa and I have been on when we're over there. And so it was just very, it was perfect to read right before we get ready to go on this trip. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. You do not have to read the first book to read this book. Mm-hmm. This character, you can pick up with him. You don't need the background.
Okay.
So you can dip in and out of them. But I knew I would like this book, and it's one of those books that's been sitting forever in my to-be-read pile, and just on Saturday, I'm like, that's it. I'm reading this book.
Well, that whole thing segues really nicely into my next pick.
Okay.
For a couple of reasons.
Okay.
So, one, this book has been sitting on my shelf for a really long time, and I finally got around to reading it. The version I have of it is an ARC, mm-hmm. and the book originally went on sale June 11th, 2019. So I have had this ARC probably
when it came
since
out.
Like yes. 6 months before that. So just, it's been a minute. It's been mm-hmm. on the shelf. But it also has to do with academia.
Uh-huh.
And it is Bunny by Mona Awad. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that I picked this ARC up initially and took it home with me is because it compares it to Heathers,
mm-hmm.
which I love Heathers.
Yeah.
Like a lot. But so it's the story of a girl named Samantha.
Mm-hmm.
And she is in an MFA program at this really fancy pants university in New England.
Mm-hmm.
And she is, she's in the fiction program. Like, so there's fiction, there's poetry, you know, whatever.
Nonfiction, yeah.
Yeah. And so they are broken up into cohorts based on what their specialty is.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been in the program. You pick it up when she's, I would say probably a semester in, maybe a year in. Most of the book is kind of her final year there. And she is sort of on the outside of her cohort because there's mm-hmm. a group of four girls and she's given them all really hilarious names. Like one is called Creepy Doll. One's called Cupcake, but they're like this group of girls who are very tightly connected. They call each other Bunny
mm-hmm.
and like, they're like, when they see each other, like, oh my God, Bunny, I missed you so much. Oh my God, Bunny, you're so beautiful. And I can see why one would want to be on the outside of that
yeah.
because just like I listened to the audiobook of mm-hmm. most of this and then switched over to the actual book because I just wanted to finish it because I mm-hmm. wanted to know what happened. But the woman who read the audiobook of this mm-hmm. was amazing. Like what she did with the voices for these women.
So I need to listen to this book.
Yeah, you should definitely listen to it. But anyway, all of a sudden, she gets invited to come to, they call it their smut salon.
Oh my.
Yeah. So she gets invited to this and she's like, I don't know. Okay. And she decides that she's going to go, but Samantha has this friend who had gone to art school. Her name is Ava. Mm-hmm. And she's dropped out of school, and is very like the girl that wears like the, like fishnet gloves and yep. is, oh, and, no. yep. and is okay. that I, girl, right?
Yep. I know who it is.
And so they're literally each other's only friends and they do everything together and they make fun of these girls. Like they don't like them. So when Samantha decides she's going to go to this thing, because she's like, I should try and get yeah. along with these people because being in class is really uncomfortable because literally they look at me like I'm garbage. They don't understand my writing. They talk, you know, and so she's trying to, so her friend Ava doesn't understand why she wants to do this.
I'm sorry. It just seems like a mistake maybe to try to be friends with these girls, but,
well, yeah. So
without giving away too much.
Yeah. So she becomes a little part of their group and she like at the smut salon, they're supposed to read like erotic things. And they get her super drunk and they're at the end of it. They tell her she has to go capture a bunny for them. And she's really confused as to why.
Yeah. No bunnies are harmed in this, are they?
All kinds of bunnies are harmed.
Okay. I don't know if I can read that then.
Well, so she captures the bunny, or she thinks she captures the bunny. She's not really sure. She ends up back in her apartment, not sure how she ended up there. She knows she had a lot to drink. Things are really unclear, but she's now kind of become a part of their world. And then they ask her to start coming to workshop.
Okay.
And I'm just not going to, I'm like, I can't say any more about what it is, but yeah, it's a weird book.
Is it horror? Is it?
I mean, it's horror adjacent. I mean, it's not really horror. I don't know. It's
surreal.
Yes.
Okay.
The one thing, my one complaint about it, because it goes severely off the rails and like you're there for it the whole time. Like that. And then the ending sort of just doesn't live up to the rest of it.
Okay.
It's not bad. It's just, I feel like she could have gone a little bit further with the ending if she had pushed it, like, because the whole book is sort of driving you this one direction and then it just sort of putters out a little bit at the end. But I think it's definitely worth it. I will say, I'm not on TikTok, but I know we've been selling a lot of this book recently, and I feel like it's been getting a lot of attention on TikTok all of a sudden. But if you like things that are a little bit off, a little bit dark, so, like, a little unhinged
for the
narrator,
readers of Night Bitch.
Yeah, like Night Bitch or like My Sister is a Serial killer. Mother thing. Like,
well, I loved all those.
Yeah, so that's sort of like unhinged.
I just don't know if I can take bunny violence.
Well, I mean,
is it as bad as the dog violence in Salvage the Bones?
I didn't read that because you told me not to, because I don't do well with dog
violence. Yeah.
I didn't mind reading it, and I usually, if there's things with animals, it bothers me, and it didn't, because it's so weird and almost sort of magical realism, sort of. So it did not bother me.
Okay.
So
good to know.
So I would recommend Bunny by Mona Awad if you, again, like the unhinged female narrator and just sort of something super strange.
Like this. Yeah.
Here you go. Have at
it. Thank you. All right. All right. So I am going to talk about something different this time. So I like poetry, but I don't often sit down and read books of poems. And I've had this little slim version with a very enticing cover, I think. of poems, Helen of Troy, 1993, by Maria Zoukala?
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed this book. So the premise is, this is Helen of Troy, except she is in Sparta, Tennessee, in the 90s, instead of...
Sure.
Yeah. So it's got a little map in the front, and she calls a little diagram of who's who. Let me see if I can find it. And she, so she has, of course, Paris, who's the stranger in the book, but she has her husband, Menelaus, who she calls the big cheese in the book. And so she initially marries Menelaus. It starts out when she's in high school, and then her marriage.
I love that she kept the names the same, though. Yeah. Like,
and then she ends up marrying the big cheese, has this kid that she's really unprepared for, and is a kind of indifferent mother, but loves her kid, and then has, you know, the affair with Paris, the stranger. None of that is a surprise, and it's all written out as a story, more or less, but in poems, and the poems are, so if you don't like E. Cummings and you do like punctuation, then this
is not
not be the book for you, because the poems are all written without any punctuation at all.
That and makes me start to twitch.
And none of it is capitalized. But there are some great lines in it. I mean, the thing I like about poetry written this way is that instead of being a novel, you feel like you're in the person's head of what they're really, really, the essence of them is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my favorites is, so it starts out, I mean, it takes place in all the places that you would frequent. Like Helen of Troy watches Jurassic Park in theaters.
Oh, good
Helen
for
of
her.
Troy cranks up the volume on Like a Prayer in the ballet studio parking lot after eating a box of Krispy Kreme donuts.
I've been there.
Yeah, which leads to an ant infestation in her car later on.
Haven't been there, thankfully.
Yeah, she left them in the back, some of them. Helen of Troy reigns over Chuck E. Cheese.
Been there, too.
Yeah, well, this one is I particularly enjoyed because it's after she has the affair and she's come back home and is invited to this party, and her daughter is too old to be at Chuck E. Cheese, and the child is 7, but her descriptions are just great. It starts out, the kid's too old for one thing, rodent mafia, more the purview of tinies in smock dresses, still built small enough to wedge their arms up the claw machine when the damn thing cheats them out of a Chuck-branded wiffle ball or some such similar landfill pre-designee. So she's cynical, she's snarky, she's fun, it's very descriptive. I think it's for fans or people who may not read a lot of poetry, because it really tells a story. Like, it reminds me of The Princess Wins, not...
The Princess Saves Herself in this one.
This one, yes.
Yeah, or it, like the Milk and Honey.
Milk and Honey. So it has that sort of continuous narrative throughout the book, and it is based on a play, and so... but just to be privy to her thoughts, they're both very poignant, very real, and very funny.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes out in, when does it come out? It comes out in January of 2025, and I think it's going to do really well. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, it has like a poem about the bathroom of a Motel 6. She's kind of a disgruntled homemaker, and she's trying to have some agency in her life.
And I like that it's sort of like a mythological retelling, but not the same thing that everybody's mm-hmm. doing where it's like, you know, like,
right.
I mean, Circe is great. Song of Achilles, great. But right. there's been like a bunch of those books all of a sudden, but this is something different.
Yeah, this is different. And it's, yeah, it's really good. It's like she never apologizes for who she is. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the book, she's like, if you're going to write some biography, and I'm paraphrasing, that's sort of mamby-pamby, making you look great or something, I am not interested. I want a cut-to-the-bone truth where you don't lie about who you are or what you've done.
Mm.
And so it's very... yeah, it's just very good. And it's, yeah, it does blur the line between mythology and where we are now, or where we were in 1993.
Sure.
The one about Jurassic Park is just, she's like, I didn't want to go, and then I finally went.
Who doesn't want to go see Jurassic Park?
Well, I mean, just, and finally went, the kid wanted to go, the big cheese came in, and then I was so into the massacre. And and I felt like I was one of these giant lizards and, you know, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I highly recommend this for people who maybe don't read a lot of poetry. And even though there isn't a lot of punctuation or paragraph breaks, the bites are small. They're a page or a page and a half. So I really don't think once you get into the rhythm of it, it distracts you that much.
Yeah.
And there's, it's kind of, I would say the poems fit into kind of the way you think, the way your mind goes back and forth of, you know, I'm walking into this room, it's really uncomfortable, I really need to see the face of my child, oh my gosh, I'm too old to be here. You know, it has that kind of...
Stream of consciousness,
but
without
not,
being Faulkner.
Right, but it's not overly wordy. Each word is so precise, and... each word is so important to the story, and it tells a full story, in, you know, 78 pages. Mm-hmm. It's just intense and it's condensed.
Okay.
And so it has a great cover. So yeah.
All right. So the last one I had is, Everyone on This Train is a Suspect, mm-hmm. by Benjamin Stevenson. So this is the sequel to Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone.
Yes.
So we pick back up with Ernest in this, and he has written the memoir, Everyone in My Family Has Killed Someone, and it's been... fairly well received. I mean, it, and he gets asked to come to the Australian Mystery Writers Festival, their 50th anniversary thing. And because it's the 50th anniversary, it is being held on this train. And it's almost, the train is very famous because it goes, it's super swanky, and it goes through like the western part of Australia, so through this like desert landscape, and stops in a few different places. But so they're holding, in addition to having the regular passengers that are there just for the swanky ride, they're holding this mystery festival on it. So when he shows up, he has been given an advance to write his next book, which they want him to write a fiction novel. And he's sort of freaking out about it because the only reason he wrote his first book is because there was a serial killer killing a bunch of people and a lot of people in his family died. And that was just sort of his response to what happened.
Yeah.
So he's finding, even though he loves mystery novels and sort of likes the rules of golden age mystery novels, that, the idea of writing fiction is difficult for him. So also on board the train are, his agent. And he's trying to push his agent to get him a blurb for his next book from Henry McTavish, who is this huge Scottish mystery writer. Who's?
Oh, wait. I think I know who that might be based on.
Well, he's got this really impressive series. And so he is part of the festival. There's a woman who's... who wrote a book 20 years ago that was a huge, like, legal thriller. Mm-hmm. And she hasn't written anything since then, but she has a new book coming out. So, like, there's this panel of very... There's a weird sort of literary writer mm-hmm. who the only reason he's there is because he took Truman Capote's In True Blood or In Cold Blood and... retold it in sort of an artsy literary way, and he thinks he's better than everyone else. He's very pretentious.
But it was told in a pretty artsy literary way. Okay. Anyway,
yes. Yeah. but also, so the publisher of Henry McTavish is there, and so there's a lot happening. It's a good locker room mystery because they're on this train.
Well, but you also have the writers writing about writers writing.
Well, so, and that's what I love about this is mm-hmm. the narration of this book. Because he starts out and he's like, okay, so I am trying to write a book again. And here's like, by 10,000 words, according mm-hmm. to the rules of mystery novels, I should have introduced every single person who will be important. Mm-hmm. I should have introduced the killer, the victims, all of that. By this point, I should have done this. By this point, I should have done this. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, I will say the killer's name 106 times in this book. Mm-hmm. And like, so he puts all of these things out, like, and he's like, it's very much breaking the fourth wall. Like yeah. he's talking to the reader the whole time. I very much enjoy the non-traditional narrator, mm-hmm. which is totally what this is. And I thought the mystery part of it was actually good. I enjoyed that.
And did he say the guy's name 106 times?
I didn't count them, but the person.
Yeah.
Again, I didn't count it, but he goes through and like he'll have like. Periodically mm-hmm. throughout the thing, like a list of the characters and how many times you said the name. And sometimes there are people who are known by two names. So if you have picked up on who like their alter ego is, okay. then you can add them together and see where you are. It's very well
interesting.
Done.
Yeah. Well, I like writers writing about writing and writers and being writers yeah. and all of that. I know some people don't, but I particularly do.
Well, so when the first body is discovered, like when mm-hmm. like he decides that he's going to try and solve this crime mm-hmm. and enlist the help of another one of the writers on the panel because he has a background as a forensic pathologist. So like the guy that's basically running the train, like the porter or whatever, he's like, no, you can't look at the crime scene. You're writers. Like, what are you doing?
This is not the movies.
Yeah. So it's funny. Okay, I will say I also started listening to this mm-hmm. as an audiobook, but I had to stop because the guy that read it mispronounced assumed.
How did he pronounce it?
He said, like, assumed, and it... and, like, the first time he did it, I was like, what? And then it kept happening, and I was like, nope.
Oh, gosh, there was another one where they pronounced something wrong years ago. I can't remember what it was, but yeah that can totally throw you off.
Yeah, I was
of
just
an
like,
audiobook.
And I can't do this anymore.
No, I'm out.
But so I would highly recommend Everyone on This Train is a Suspect mm-hmm. by Benjamin Stevenson. It came out earlier this year, and I have the arc. There's a little sort of holiday novella mm-hmm. that he's done that's coming out for the holidays this year, too, that I'm excited to read. But I think he's really funny. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Very good. Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
so what are you currently reading?
I'm listening to, because I've been currently reading all the books we talked
well,
about.
Well, sure.
But yeah. But I'm listening to The Lord of the Rings. After our talk about The Hobbit, I just couldn't resist.
I have also delved in.
Yeah, and I have jumped in, and I have really enjoyed it. And weirdly, there's less poetry in it than I remember being in it as a child.
Oh, really? Because I felt like there was more.
Oh, that's funny.
Like,
I was like, oh, there isn't. But
I was like, why is Pippin singing a bathing song? Stop it.
Well, they have a walking song and a hiking song and a bathing song. Okay, there are a lot of those.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm listening to it and Andy Serkis is reading it.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was funny because I was like, there's more of it.
Where did all this come from?
Where did this come from?
But I am thoroughly in enjoying it. And I just remember how much I love these books. And it had been a while since I had jumped back into them because Melissa and I have pretty high reading commitments and it's hard to go back. I used to reread things like every year and it's good that I'm reading a lot of new things, but it doesn't give me a chance always to revisit those things that I really loved. Mm. And this is just the basis of so much fantasy that's out there in the world.
It's true.
For good or bad.
Yeah.
And it's fun to go back to the roots of it. And each time I read it, there's a little something different because I'm a little older and I've had a little more life experience that I pick out of it. There's things that I didn't see as so funny before that I see as comical now, like the whole part with Fatty Bulger and some of it is more, it's just, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. So, and I do really like this particular narration with Andy Serkis reading them. He does a good job.
Sure.
He's obviously very familiar.
Yes, he knows something about it.
Yes, and we haven't gotten to where Gollum's speaking, but it'll be coming up soon.
So I am reading The Bones Beneath My Skin by T.J. Klune, which is coming out in, I think, April of 2025, maybe February of 2025. The beginning of 2025. But it actually is a re-release. Like, this is one of the things that T.J. wrote and self-published. Because he has a lot of books that he self-published prior to, like, The House in the Cerulean Sea coming out. But because those books, all the things that he's published since House in the Cerulean Sea have done so well, Tor is going back and is re-releasing some of these older things. I'm not super far into it. I'm enjoying it a lot, but I will say that I think the writing is a little rougher than like his writing is. Like, you can see like the progression, like the growth in his writing, but he's still like, the story still grabs you and you like are instantly kind of like, he's so good with characters and making you feel attached
to the
characters. I'm sitting
across from Melissa nodding.
Yeah.
But I realize you can't really see that.
Yeah. So. But, and this one is happening in 1995. So like, it's just kind of the things that he's talking about. Like, the main character is a journalist who worked in DC and he's been fired from his job for a bit of an indiscretion. And he has inherited a cabin from his parents. He inhabited a cabin and a pickup truck from his parents who died in a murder-suicide situation.
Oh,
and
okay.
Like, he had a very troubled relationship with his parents because the main character, Nate, is gay. And when his father found out, he basically kicked him out and the mother didn't do anything and like just stood by and let it happen. And so he hasn't been connected with his parents and sort of like has a lot of anger from that, but because he's been fired from his job, just decides to go to this cabin because he has nothing else going on and trying to reset his life. But when he gets there, there's a man and a little girl who are at his cabin, and the man has been shot, and they're hiding out, and the... The little girl, who says her name is Artemis Darth Vader, is ridiculous. And I'm sure there's more to the story, but I haven't gotten there. I have suspicions about what's going on, but she's hilarious and Nate ends up cooking her bacon, and it's mm-hmm. one of the greatest things that's ever happened in her life. And,
okay.
Yeah. So anyway, if you like TJ Klune's work, if you mm-hmm. like, sort of that wholesome feeling he gives you in spite of what's
whimsical,
happening.
Yeah.
It'll
all be okay.
Yeah. So this one is going in that direction. I'm curious to see where the story goes, mm-hmm. but I'm enjoying it.
Good. Very good.
And then, so we changed mm-hmm. what our prompt for the reading challenge was going to be for September, because we realized we were stupid and put read a banned book in October, and September is when banned books week is. So the prompt for September is read a banned book.
Well, that's not hard to do. Almost every book, it seems like, has been banned recently.
Yes. So I am going to read Year of Wonders by Geraldine Brooks, which is like a novel about the plague.
You know, one that's been banned that you wanted to read, Brideshead Revisited.
I know, but I'm not there yet. Like, I'm reading them in order of publication, so I have two more in between. Okay. So I did think about that, but it doesn't fit in where I am.
Yeah. I have to think about what I'm going to read for Banned Book Month. I have been going through, ultimately, I've checked all the boxes from the challenge, but maybe not in the exact order.
Sure.
I'm a rebel.
Yes. All right. Well, if you are also checking boxes for the reading challenge, mm-hmm. Fill out the little template and share it with us.
I know. And I'm not eligible for the gift card, so.
Well, there is reading for reading's sake.
It's true. I know. I'm too high. Read for reading's sake.
But anyway, fill that out and tag us in it. If you complete it, there you could be eligible for a gift card. And Jessica and I will be back next month. And
if all goes well.
Assuming, nothing happens in England.
Hopefully some things will happen in England, but tragic.
Yeah, nothing tragic. So we'll be back and have tales to tell, I have no doubt.
Yes. All right. Till next time.
All right. Bye.